then we came up with a concept of, hey, why we are not building something which is today called Hello New, which allows us to found more and more agencies over the years that are specialized in some things. And this was also the start of Hello Design. And because we are big believers in specialization when it comes to agencies, we don't believe in agencies that they can do everything.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why we're having Hello Agile and Hello Design today. So Hello Agile is specializing on bringing agile knowledge and Scrum, OKR, and other workshop methodologies into companies. And beside that, we have Hello Design. And we started out as 3 people, and now we are almost 30 people within this 3 years, which is quite crazy, to be honest. And it's very, very hard. And it's nothing you can do on a side hustle.
Nope.
It's something that really required a shitload of work over the last 3 years, and it will still require a lot of things, because now with 30 people, we need more and more processes that we are not getting mad at each other every single time because we lost this or that.
Bonanza Growth Podcast, innovation, strategy, and UX for SaaS. Bonanza Studios is a growth consultancy for SaaS and fintech startups. Every SaaS business needs to fight in 3 different battles. First, product market fit, discovering a growing marketing and designing a compelling and undeniable solution to meet that demand. Second, product-led growth, turning your product into a growth vehicle by leveraging outcome-driven UX design. And third, creative marketing and organic brand building. If you're looking for a reliable partner to drive growth, check out our website at bonanza-studios.com.
This year is going to be the personal branding year for me. It's one of my focus topics I really want to push forward in 2024. It was a very interesting topic for me in, I would say, 2019, when Instagram and design was still a thing. Then I really used a lot of time and energy to post content on Instagram. But now I think the best platform to share professional content is LinkedIn. And that's the reason I'm very happy to make the start for my goal this year here with you.
Yeah, it's hardly imaginable. Like, I think already a great starting point to the podcast is that it's hardly imaginable to grow a brand
mm-hmm.
in 2024 and beyond
mm-hmm.
without having a marketing arm. You know, what I'm seeing, what I have been experimenting, what I have seen with clients is that the typical sales and growth hacking techniques like outbound marketing, what have you, I mean, they're not really working the way you expect them to do. Right? And at the end of the day, all the brands that I see that are very successful, they are pushing a message out there that is valuable for wider market. Fabrice, I bump into you. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you gave a talk at Hatch with Damien.
Yeah.
Then caught my interest. Then I look at Hello Design and your work that you are doing there. Also, I started following you on LinkedIn and told myself, first podcast of 2024 has to start with Fabrice. So walk us through sort of like your career, your journey all the way. I mean, I let you pick the starting date.
Yeah.
But all the way from the beginning till now.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much that I'm able to share my story and my knowledge here in your podcast. And I say hello to the audience as well. So if you see us on LinkedIn right now, I'm very happy to get some questions live into this podcast too. So where should I start? I think I started a little bit earlier than university, just to make it a little bit more interesting and share a little bit more about my life. So I started out as a designer when I was, I would say, around about 15 years old, because someone in our band had to design the band logo and the band merchandise. And I know a lot of designers, and you rather are in a band, or you are a skateboarder, or you into hip hop or into subculture. And yeah, this is my story where I started designing things. And after I designed the first shirts and merchandise for my band, because I was the person with Photoshop and I was the creative, I studied communication design in my bachelor's, and I studied media and design management in my master's. And during my bachelor, when I was still studying communication design, I tried out a lot of things. So I got into photography, I got into filming, I got into copywriting, I got into graphic design. And I was all the time a freelancer, and I freelanced for small agencies, big agencies, and I always had small clients in my local town where I'm coming from, in Germany. And after I gained, or I had some success with working with agencies, I studied my master degree, and I discovered the term design thinking, because design thinking wasn't a thing in a communication design studies, which is still crazy for me. The university really have to change this. And I discovered design thinking, and then I discovered, after design thinking, innovation and innovation management. I discovered digitalization. And from that point on, a human-centered design also became a thing. And I started to facilitating workshops a little bit, teaching people about design thinking. And there was one point where I visited a meetup, which was about behavioral design. And I was very curious what this actually is. And I think this was in 2018. And from this moment, when I visited this meetup, there was an amazing presenter from the Netherlands. I fell in love with the topic of behavioral design. And this is what I actually do today. So I use behavioral design, which is a method where you combine psychology and design thinking. And I use it together with my team at Hello Design. We are a product design or product consultancy, or product design consultancy based in Germany, to build digital products. And we are focusing especially on building products that make people happier, healthier, wealthier, and more productive. And this is, in short, my short career as a designer and CEO of Hello Design.
Something that I picked up from your conversation, that early on in your career, you've done different things. You wore many hats. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's a very positive trend I see in great designers, that early on, without committing to one track specifically, they try to gain as much as experience in different fields.
Yeah.
Before a specialization.
Absolutely. I would recommend this to every young designers. I know people on YouTube or Instagram are telling you, hey, you have to niche down to gain customers. Yes, this is maybe true if you are a senior designer or a very experienced person. But if you are just starting out as a junior designer, try to do everything, because first of all, you will not get the clients for a very specific thing, because your craft is not good enough. And the other thing is, you as a young person, as a young human being, maybe you don't know what you want to specialize in. So be a learner, think and test out stuff, and maybe you are more interested in 3D design than logo design for pizza restaurants, and you discover this and you become an amazing 3D designer later in your career.
Such a great advice. And I think myself as well, when I wanted to get into UX, I started in startup world, and being a designer in the startup world means that you get to work on different things by force. You know, they don't have. And then all of a sudden I realized that I'm learning about marketing, I'm learning about sales, I'm learning about biz dev by just working with the folks next to me sitting. And they ask me, hey, I want this poster. But to design a poster, I'm like, I have to ask, why do you need the poster for? So the conversation actually was a free education for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can't agree more. Working not only in agencies and also in, I don't know, startups or bigger or smaller companies will definitely let you grow as a designer. And even later on now in my design leadership career as a CEO, I am so happy that I tried out a lot of things because I can relate to a lot of other things. I can give a very good creative brief to a photographer today because I was a photographer, freelance photographer myself. It's way, yeah, way easier if you experience something, then you can manage it way, way easier.
And I cannot emphasize how much that skill set to be able to offer really exact and specific brief,
yeah,
could save your business lots of money and lots of overhead costs and lots of headache of going back and forth with folks that they need, that you need to get the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I wanted to touch base on that because it's such a great point, and I wanted to basically surface it for all the folks, designers especially, not only designers, everyone in the creative world to hear it. But move on to the behavioral design. You said like it's a, basically, if I not mistaken, and if I heard it completely, it's a blend of design thinking, human-centered design, and you leverage it to design digital apps that helps people to improve their lives.
Yeah, exactly. So if I... when I explain behavioral design in my trainings or in keynotes or whatever, I always say to people, hey, if you want to try to change behavior, you need two things. You need the knowledge of behavioral science, psychological psychology, behavioral economics. So you need a lot of theoretical things. And then you need these you take these theoretical things and blend them into design thinking where you can take all the creative approaches from. And the part where it's about changing behavior is more like, what is the purpose you want to achieve with this method? So behavioral design can be used to sell more t-shirts, shoes, online courses, but you can use the same methodology to build, for example, a patient diary for hospital patients or whatever. So it's just a method, and you can use the method for good or bad. And the interesting part is that not a lot of people are aware how irrational human beings actually are. Uh-huh. We know when we think about maybe our last decision, where we are jumping onto a sale and we buy a t-shirt we don't want to actually use, or we don't need, or we are booking our next trip to whatever kind of city and we're using the hotel, which is a little bit more expensive, but a little bit more cool, and we buy it super fast. Humans are very, very irrational. And behavioral science and psychology and behavioral economics are giving explanation why are humans that irrational. And these irrational behaviors are very, very interesting if you try to design something people use every single day.
That's right. I think that's something that a lot of founders often mistake, that they think that the process of engaging with their potential customers is very logical. But when I tell them that a lot of decision that we are making is emotionally driven, I often see a pause in their face, and there is a disconnect between how they think engagement happens and actually how engagement happens.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Everybody wants an application or a piece of software that people really like and want to use it every single day. And I often, in my behavior design trainings, I give the explanation or the example of Uber, because you can argue that Uber is a technological revolution and a tech product. And yes, it is. But this is not the success of the product. The success of the product is a psychological innovation. Because when you're using a regular taxi, you have a lot of friction and you have a lot of uncertainty, which is going on when you are using the taxi. You have no idea what the price is. You have no idea where you are, when is the taxi coming, and how good is the taxi driver. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And in behavioral science, you have a lot of evidence that people don't like uncertainty. We like to avoid it. And Uber had a very smart idea how to design the user interface to kill all the friction and all the uncertainty out of this user experience of using a taxi. And Uber is a very successful company today, and people use it every single day. And it's more like a psychological effect that hits and makes this product so successful. It's not the technological part. Yes, the technological part is important, and yes, you need a very good business case behind it. But what I try to explain here is, if you want to be a really good human-centered designer, you have to understand how humans work and or the human brain works, and this is what psychology tried to explain.
In the case of Uber, as I heard it correctly, is that people are generally risk averse. If you offer them two ways, hey, yeah, one way is very uncertain, the other way is very certain, we are comfort-seeking animals. Also, we are very social animals, right? So when you combine the need for socialization, a very interesting story, a close friend of mine in New York, they got recently engaged, invited to their wedding. They met their partner in one of these Uber share riding app.
Oh, really?
They did.
Nice.
So they were going home. So it was midnight. They met and then they held hands. And they were like, you know what? Why should we go home now? They ended up in another party because they wanted to get to know each other. Yeah. And from that point onwards, that story developed. Now they are getting married thanks to Uber.
Yeah, this is a very funny story. You should sell this to Uber and make a marketing campaign out of it.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. But what you were saying about that humans are in general pretty risk averse is absolutely true. So we try to avoid risk, and this is simply pushed into or manifested in our DNA. And we are looking for mental shortcuts. When we have to make a decision, is this decision better or is this decision better? And the mental shortcuts in a theoretical language are called heuristics and biases. So humans are making decision based on heuristics and biases. This is nothing I came up with. This is something the amazing Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner, came up with and researched his whole life about. And for example, when it comes to social things, there's the social proof effect. So everybody knows the 5-star rating on Google when it comes to restaurants or the testimonials you are using on your websites. Yes, these are all marketing hacks maybe, but they are also based on a psychological effect, which is called social proof. And this is the way humans think. And if you are designing stuff for the way humans think, you can nudge them into one or another direction.
Such a fascinating point. So basically, you are saying that understand the ways, like internal ways of humans, how us.
Yeah.
Navigate our world, leverage that, identify those areas that are relevant to your apps and leverage it as part of your app mechanics.
Yeah.
To create engagement.
Absolutely. And like I said before, you can use it for good and you can use it for bad. For example, the reason one of the reasons why an application like TikTok is so successful, is because the infrastructure or the whole idea behind the application is based on variable rewards. So people are very people like variable rewards more, like rather than normal rewards. So a little example right here, if you go to the casino and you always win $50, it's not that excited. If you go to the casino and you sometimes win $1 and you sometimes win $10,000, it's way more exciting. So coming back to TikTok, it's the same thing. You open up your TikTok app. It's very, very frictionless. It's very easy. It's just one tap. And boom, the first variable reward pops up in the first video. Oh, kind of funny. You swipe. Oh, kind of funny. The next variable reward. Next reward. Next reward. So TikTok is so successful because they break down this psychological thing on a very, 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 very easy gesture. And it's the same thing. The tech behind it is also good, but it's also the psychological effects that make this app so successful.
So let's go through a use case that we have a really great use case for that Fabrice recently won an award for the platform that within Hello Design that they conceptualized is called Coachy. And that's a really cool example of leveraging behavioral design to design an application that actually helps people. So Fabrice, talk to me about how did this project come around and how you approached it? What was your process? What step you took from A to Z to bring it to fruition and production?
Definitely, I can do this. So first of all, I want to do a shout out to Alena, my COO, because she was responsible for the project and I was just the sparring partner for this. So Alena, a clap, clap, clap. And I'm so proud that we won the German Design Award for this. And but I definitely can talk about the process. So Coachy, to summarize it in a couple of words, Coachy is a platform where coaches can provide online courses and a community to their clients. And what we did at the beginning was a new branding, and which it sounds like a graphic design challenge, but if you using behavioral design to this, it becomes more and more interesting. The way we are working is always in sprints and workshops. We start every single project not with a brief, and then we are getting into our basement and coming out a month later with a concept. No, it's not the way how we do it. We always do it with a sprint. And Laura, the client, the CMO of Coachy, told us, hey, we need a brand that's more consistent and we need to make it pop. So they didn't know what they actually wanted. And what we tried to achieve within the sprint, and then we figured out, oh, okay, we maybe should use this color because it's the most distinctive one in between your competitors. And why is distinctiveness so important? So think about distinctiveness as a trigger when you are researching competitors. So if you are going to the supermarket and there are 10 different chocolate bars, and chocolate bars in general are green, just for example, and there's one that's pink, that's the most distinctive one, that's the most with the best trigger. And this is the way how we are using behavioral science in a brand sprint. So you can use this knowledge in any kind of field. It doesn't matter if you want to build the brand or if you want to build the user interface. And after this brand sprint, we used behavioral design also in the process in redesigning the software a little bit. I'm not allowed to talk about so much about it, but yes, you can design a software, especially the backend of a software that makes it easier, more frictionless for coaches to set up their own online course as easy as possible. And if you are thinking about behavioral design again, the default option is a very interesting concept you can always use because humans have the tendency to stay with a default. And defaults you design within your user interface are very, very, very important. And this is the from the backend side. And just one last sentence for the front end, right? So if you are, I don't know, a learner or a participant of a Coachy course, and you can make the platform as engaging as possible. You can use some stuff from gamification. You can use some ideas from another app I don't know, you can create content that feels like TikTok, but you are actually learning something. So it's very, very interesting how many concepts you can integrate in a project like coaching.
That's such an interesting UX approach. Okay, TikTok mechanics is not healthy.
Yeah.
Because it locks you in.
Yeah.
And hours gone by and...
Absolutely.
You wasted your time. But what if we use it? We use that the same mechanic or something similar to apply it to actual learning and coaching.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm very happy that we are with Hello Design often have clients that try to bring good into the world. But this is just a happy situation we are in. But this is the way how we are trying to position ourselves. So if you're always talking about conversion rates and blah, 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 the tendency that people come to you, I don't know, who want to make their online shop better. Yes, you can do this as well. But if you position yourself as us as an agency that tries to change human behavior for the better, this is the clients you will attract in the future.
And so how did you arrive at Hello Design? Because it seems like you guys are growing. You got COO in place. Means that operation is complex enough that requires a COO.
Yeah.
So how did you make that transition? What kind of signals you were seeing or getting from the market that sort of like push you towards this direction? Hey, I think it's time to turn it into a agency or business at large and grow it from there.
So let's get back to the year 2020. In 2020, I was a freelance UI designer or UX designer, whatever. And I had the feeling that I hit a wall. I had no idea how to make my freelance business bigger. And there was this workshop together with David and Christian, my co-founders today. And they asked me, hey, Fabrice, we want to grow our agency, which is called Hello Agile. And we are thinking your knowledge can help us to do this. And I was like, okay, let's try it. I'm not happy with a freelance thing. Let's try to do it. And in 2020, I think it was even in 2019, we made an offsite. We locked ourselves together in a beautiful Airbnb and we thought, okay, how can we build a company that suits our need to always being able to create something new? Because this was something in us. We knew that it wasn't just Hello Agile. And then we came up with a concept of, hey, why we are not building something which is today called Hello New, which allows us to found more and more agencies over the years that are specialized in some things. And this was also the start of Hello Design. And because we are big believers in specialization when it comes to agencies, we don't believe in agencies that they can do everything.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why we're having Hello Agile and Hello Design today. So Hello Agile is specializing on bringing agile knowledge and Scrum, OKR, and other workshop methodologies into companies. And beside that, we have Hello Design. And we started out as three people, and now we are almost 30 people within this 3 years, which is quite crazy, to be honest. And it's very, very hard. And it's nothing you can do on a side hustle.
Nope.
It's something that really required a shitload of work over the last 3 years, and it will still require a lot of things, because now with 30 people we need more and more processes that we are not getting mad at each other every single time because we lost this or that. And this is the way how I became CEO of Hello Design, and also it changed my role as a person a lot. So at the beginning, I was 100% practical, operational, serving stuff to clients. And today it's more about, hey, I have Azure fix with this or that employee and how we can grow you, or what can we help you with, or whatever. And this is a hard transition for me because
yes.
I'm a craftsman.
Yes.
And it's a hard decision I have to make. But it's okay. And I'm very happy that I had two amazing co-founders, and I'm very happy that I now have Alena as a COO. And because she has a lot more experience over 20 years in leading design teams that are way bigger than us. So if you are thinking about
help you, I'll always try hire somebody that is smarter than you in a particular area.
Something that you mentioned, and I really want to get into it a bit more, I think that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs, design entrepreneurs are facing, is that we essentially craft people at heart and we want to push pixels. I still like sometimes when I see that there is a project and something is I can do, I still get involved to a certain degree, as long as, you know, the time and all tens of other things that I have to deal with allows me. So was that a smooth transition, or was that something that you needed to work on, get some advices or coaching? Just if you can just drill down a bit on that process of transitioning from being a hands-on designer to be a CEO of a business, I think that would brings about a lot of value for our audience.
Yeah. Absolutely. To be honest, I'm still in the middle of the process. And I'm now 3 years in. This is nothing you can do with a finger snap and then it's fine. And it took a lot of discussions together with my co-founders. Who is responsible for this? Who is responsible for that? Hey, for please, you actually have to do this kind of work. But hey, yeah, I still want to do this or that kind. I think there are several perspectives on this topic, and I think the most important one is that you as a human being, or me as Fabrice, has to accept on a deep personal level first that you are not solo anymore and you are not a freelancer anymore.
Yeah.
And as soon as you accept this, you have to find ways to take your knowledge out of your head and give this to others. And this will take, and took me another year how to do this. And honestly, to accept this, that maybe something will not gonna be that perfect. Because at the beginning of the company, often you are the person that makes it pixel perfect.
Yes.
And maybe the junior designer you are hiring doesn't make it pixel perfect, but he can't because he's a junior designer, which is fine. But you have to find very quickly ways how to take the knowledge out of your head and give the knowledge to others. And I think when you have a small agency, I don't know, 2, 6, 5 or even 10 people, you still can work a lot on topics with clients and making the website, or I don't know, using Figma every single day. Which is fine. But as soon as the structure becomes bigger and the structure has to be managed, you need to let go more and more. And today I only am involved in client projects where some briefings are very specific and very tricky. And I always do the 80% work at the beginning. I facilitate the very complicated political workshop 2 or 3 at the beginning, and then I hand it over to my senior designer, because then all the most important parts are all set and everybody can work. This is what I would recommend. So take your time, discuss a lot of with your co-founders who wants to do this or that role. And at the end of the day, if you are not at all feeling this management position thing, don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Don't do it anymore. Don't push yourself into something you simply don't like. Quit and become a freelancer again, or do whatever you want to do with your life.
That's such a great advice. It's not business. I think in the past several years, becoming an entrepreneur / business owner has been over marketized and over glorified, and I still have some folks that they are designing really cool interfaces. They are some of the best in town. They're making loads of money. But they chose a very comfortable path working for the likes of Johnson & Johnson, Apple. And when we look at our sort of like end of the year income, they actually make a significant amount of income.
Yeah.
And they don't have none of the hustle that I am going through to make a business. So at the end of the day, it's, I think what you said is so true, that you got to see what works for you, who you yeah. are as a person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't agree more that the job as an entrepreneur is totally overhyped because it's hard. It's very hard. And for example, in our company, if you are becoming a senior, your next level don't has to be the management position. It can be an expert position, and we'll get the very, 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 very tricky projects. And beside the fact that you can choose other career paths, it always comes down to what you want to achieve with your life. If you want to achieve something, a creation of something that you can call your own, this is very important that you become an entrepreneur. But if you are thinking about your life that I want to be the very good craftsman and I want to have a very good salary because I want to go to Bali 5 times a year with my family, don't become an entrepreneur. This life will make you very unhappy.
So one thing that I would like to drill down more with you is your use of design sprints.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's something that a lot of folks have talked about it, but when you talk to people on a one-on-one basis, they use design sprint differently. They have a different definition. So maybe like to get the point across, maybe walk us through your ways before design sprint, how you would like design something,
yeah.
and how now you leverage design sprint to deliver your work.
Yeah. I think so there's a little bit of magic behind our design sprint, but in general I have the very clear structure based on the Google design sprint. So we are doing the design sprint within 4 days, and it has still a very similar structure to the original one. So the first day is just to discovering the problem, defining the two-year goal, setting up some lightning demos to understand the competitors, then making the concepts on the first day. Next day, you're just voting for the concepts. And on the third day, you have the prototype. And the fourth day, you have the test. So I have a very practical approach and a very normal approach, I would say, to design sprints. I think, which is very important, that you introduce this concept to clients very early, because they are not... they don't understand it at the beginning that they have to do something. But if you are explaining them that they are kind of in charge and that they can contribute all their knowledge, and this is often the way how I sell it, that people can contribute their knowledge and it's not just the agency that doing some fancy stuff in a basement. And this is very important when I'm approaching this design sprint. And what we are doing with Hello Design is always that we are integrating our behavioral design knowledge into the design sprint.
Right.
Because when you are creating a new product, which the design sprint is perfect for, you also can think about, okay, how can we use behavioral science to make it more engaging from scratch? And this is the reason I changed a couple of the exercises within the design sprint. For example, we don't use a two-year goal. We use a behavioral statement. And a behavioral statement is a framework how you define goals within behavioral design. And you basically define the behavior you want to achieve or you want to have from your users. What they should do every single day. And it's very interesting. When you are focusing on the behavior instead of focusing on any KPI. So if you are defining a two-year goal, for example, yeah, we want to have XYZ downloads and XYZ KPIs. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. What the people you are designing for should do. So it's such a great approach to human-centered design when you are mixing and matching a couple of behavioral science things into the design sprint. So, like I said, a very basic process of a four-day workshop where you're at the end of the day defining the problem, the goals, creating a prototype and test it within 4 days.
I love what you said about focusing on the behavior that you want to promote versus any other fancy business KPIs.
Yeah.
I had this discussion the other day on LinkedIn and the back and forth was about business objective on a yearly basis. And someone said that, okay, why do we want to set the business objective? At the end of the day, every business needs to increase revenue and reduce costs. But the response was, no, we want to really focus on a specific behavior that we would like to see more in our network, so to speak, right? Yeah. And I think it's such a healthy way of approaching it because essentially, if you can find ways through UX to help your learners book more coaching, that will eventually translate into business revenue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very interesting if you ask people or if I ask some of my clients, hey, what the people should do, what is their behavior? They don't have an answer. And this is the first sign for me that they don't have an idea what their actual goal is. They want an improvement in KPIs. I don't have anything against KPIs. You have to measure everything to learn. But if you can answer the question, what people should do with your software, you will get nowhere.
And such a simple question to pose as well. What should people do with your app? And if you don't, I see your argument. If I cannot provide an answer to a simple question, like what should people do with your app, then why the hell am I trying to build this business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Huh. And the fun thing is you can break everything down towards a specific behavior people should do. And it doesn't matter. So I often work together with people from the agile world and change manager and organization managers. And often, I don't know, a C-level in a company says, we want to have a new world company or we want to have, I don't know, an agile company and blah, blah. What does this actually mean? So what is the kind of behavior people do on a single, on a daily basis that you can tell we have an agile company right now? And if you can break it down towards simple behavioral changes, it becomes so much easier to measure something which is sometimes very hard to measure. For example, becoming a new work company, does it mean that people are making dailies every single day? Does it mean that people are staying in the home office? Does it mean that people, I don't know, whatever. So try to break it down towards specific behaviors and you will definitely understand the problem way better than before.
So one technical question in the way that you run your design sprint around behaviors that you want to influence. Let's say Airbnb. Mm-hmm. As a person who wants to book an accommodation on Airbnb, first I need to search.
Yeah.
And find something I like. Second, I need to book. Right, two different behaviors.
Yeah.
So if Airbnb comes to you, do you prescribe one design sprint for two behaviors or two design sprints for this two behavior that you want to influence?
Oh, okay. That's an interesting question. I think it depends a little bit how complex the task is. In your Airbnb example, if Airbnb would be the client, I would focus on one thing because the product is already so sophisticated.
Right.
So you need a level of sophistication inside the product. If a company, I don't know, for example, we have a surf company that we are working with. Their booking platform is not that sophisticated. It can't be. And in a design sprint, we are checking the whole journey because we can influence the whole journey within one design sprint way better. And the outcome will be way better if we look at everything. And so if you have a very sophisticated product, a very grown-up product, then focus on one behavior. If you have, I don't know, a very early product, focus on a journey. Don't focus on all journeys. Focus on one journey. But within this journey, there can be a couple of behaviors.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So especially early product that they don't have a sophisticated user journey.
Yeah.
It's better to look at the entire
user
experience in one go, because you want to create a wholesome experience.
Yeah.
To bring all the key behaviors you want to influence and have it part of design system.
Exactly. And I can tell you exactly why this is important. Think about it. Let's stay with the booking experience. So think about, you open up a new web page where you can book a surf trip, and you are focusing all in into, I don't know, the booking experience. And we have a behavioral design sprint only for this behavior. And yes, you can achieve very good goals for the booking. But then the checkout or whatever is so, so bad. It's so full of friction. You will never make one sale. And when I analyze customer journeys, I always think about customer journeys not in touch points or whatever. I always thinking about decision moments. Mm-hmm. And if you understand every single decision moment within a journey very well, then you can decide, okay, first of all, we have to put 80% of effort into every single decision moment. And then we can specialize in an iteration design sprint or in an iteration workshop. The third decision moment is very, very important. I don't know, because it's the detail page of the apartment. And then we make an iteration workshop for this. And then you can measure something. If it's fine, okay. Then you are just measuring. Oh, the fifth point is also important. Then you focus on this. But find the decision moments where people have to make a decision. And it's often, will I stay on this website, or will I use this app even more, or will I do something else?
Fantastic. So find the key decision moments, really focus on 80% of your focus on crafting experience that could engage and retain your users. And for any subsidiary steps before and after, what have you, you can set aside an iteration sprint that you can go deeper in those.
Exactly. And this is the way how we are working at Hello Design as well. So just a little side idea. I don't believe in the business model of agencies that have these $1 million contracts all over year and blah, 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 because on my side, my clients don't sign these contracts anymore. People want to have control. And this is the way how, as an agency, you can give your clients a little bit more of control as well. You can do one sprint and then you're out. You can do two, you can do three, you can, I don't know, do a half one and thinking, oh, this is not for us, and then move on. But this just from a business perspective as an agency owner.
Well, that's very contradictory to what every other business agency, not every other, the most business agencies desires. They would like to lock in a client, retain your client for 12 months and just create, be busy.
Yeah, exactly. But
I feel exactly. Too. My approach to my clients here is like, as soon as you think that we are not providing a value, leave.
Yeah. That's a good thing. Otherwise, everybody gets mad, and then at the end of the day, they say, I don't like this agency, they didn't work, and blah, blah. So being super, super transparent and very radical in your communication as an agency was very important for us over the last 3 years, and I can't recommend this more. Be as honest as possible.
Fabrice, as sort of a closing remark, how do you see 2024 unfolding? If you want to look at the global design market, if you want to look at the German market, what was our aim? I don't want to be specific, but if you have any general last remarks on this.
So I have three topics that are very, very important for me, and I am not sure which one I will focus the most on, but I will share everything and you can choose what you want to focus on too. So the first is very obvious. It's the AI revolution, or however you want to call it. So right. I think designers really have to understand large language model. They understand generative AI, and they have to understand how to design with AI, and they have to understand how to design for AI. And when I'm talking about with AI, you have to understand the tools, you have to understand how to use ChatGPT, you have to understand Midjourney. And when I'm talking about design for AI, you have to understand what does this making with my user interfaces or with my experiences? Will we have forms in the future? I don't know. I just need a chat window or whatever. Or as a UX writer, you have to understand how this company chatbot speaks in the future. So understand how to design for and with AI is a very important trend in 2024. And I don't think it's a trend. It's a thing that we say. The other thing is go deep into augmented reality and virtual reality. Even Meta is dead. I think with the Apple Vision Pro, augmented reality is a thing. And and 3D works very different from flat user interfaces. You have to understand the room, the dimensions and whatever. How?
Fabrice, yeah. Just a second. I'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So everybody now on the live stream, you can put a question into this little chat right here. Maybe we can put into the live chat as well, as long as Bharat is away. And now he's back.
Sorry.
No worries.
Amazon.
No worries. So,
AR.
Exactly. AR is the other thing because, like I said, designing flat designs is very, it's not very easy. It's still tricky, but designing in three dimensions makes it very, very complicated. And you also don't have a lot of design systems for three-dimensional spaces. So the spatial design thing can be something, and it's difficult. You still have to understand maybe some Unity stuff. You have to, I don't know, understand 3GS stuff if you want to go into web, whatever. So there are a lot of things you can learn as a designer and position yourself create value out of this. And the last thing, which is a completely different thing, is about life-centered design and how you can use design methodologies to design a better world. And I'm really talking about the sustainability right here, circular economy right here. It's very nice if we have 3D application, and it's nice if we have AI, but if we are done figuring out how to save this world on a political and an economical level, we are so fucked. And this is something I'm really struggling with right now, yeah. Because I don't know where I should put my focus on with my design business. It's hard.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. In Germany and all over the world, right-far parties are going crazy. People vote for them, and this can't be our future. And for everybody who is interested in this topic, read the book "Design for a Better World" by Don Norman, and it will help. It will help to understand it, why things are the way they are.
I really like your three directions. I think there are grand directions. There are something that very spot on. I think I see a lot of design trends in 2024 on LinkedIn. And I think this has been the three categories that are general enough,
mm-hmm.
that are very urgent, and that needs to be addressed one way or another.
Yeah.
I think AI is going to stay. I think our craft is going to, like, what we think of UX design, we have to be prepared. We have to start preparing ourselves to say goodbye to, because I think interfaces are going through massive overhaul. A lot of revamping is going to happen. I'm still shocked, to be honest, by how much Apple sold, 88,000
yeah.
units they sold. I thought no one would touch that device, to be honest. I saw certain things about it that was cool, but the fact that it's so heavy and it's on you and you have to like have a plug, and I was like, who wants this? But 88,000 proved me wrong, and I need to be prepared when market tells me, no, this is actually going to work. It seems like there's a market for it. It's like, just to give you an idea, when they introduced iPhone, their initial sales was 44,000 units.
Wow.
Initial iPhone, 88,000. So I was very blown away and surprised. And I was, at the same time, no, I think I know better than the market. Why the market? And regarding the last point, I feel you. And I think we are going through such a big, such turbulent times for folks that they don't know so much about German politics. It's not looking good. We are going through a lot of soul searching in Germany. And I thank you enough. I cannot thank you enough, Fabrice, for helping me to open 2024. Any last word for the audience?
Any last thoughts? Stay positive. Positive. Take all your creative and design energy and use it for something good.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Thanks that I'm allowed to be a guest in your podcast and in your live session.
Thank you for listening to this episode. For more information, go to bonanza-studios.com.